Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's April 6, 2010, and this is episode 237. This week, I take you on a brief tour of the first half of our Hokkaido Photography Tour and Workshop from 2010. I'm also very happy to be able to announce that I've just posted full details of the 2011 workshops at mbpworkshops.com. And yes, that's workshops within the plural, because next year I'm offering two Hokkaido workshops, one whirlwind 5-day tour, visiting the places that we'll look at today, and then one 12-day tour in which we'll first visit the snow monkeys that we talked about in episode 233. And then we go on to Hokkaido for a further 9 days. Based on feedback from this year's participants, we'll no longer go over to the central part of Hokkaido for the landscape leg. Rather, we'll be spending more consecutive days in most hotels to save us from uprooting every morning, and also give us more time to work each subject, as well as a little bit more relaxed time. It also gives us time for me to do some structured lectures on workflow, etc., as well as working in some critique sessions to look at and critique the work of the participants. And these things are going to help to increase the workshop aspect of the tour, so I'm really looking forward to this. Before we jump into the main topic, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, WebSpy, the internet monitoring, analysis and reporting specialists. And as usual, I'd like to ask you to tweet the message thanks to @WebSpy for sponsoring the @MartinBaileyPhotography podcast on Twitter to show your support. To find out more about WebSpy and their products, go to webspy.com/MBP and use the discount code MBPWSY for a 10% discount on anything that you buy. It's been almost 2 months since we got back from the 2010 Hokkaido Photography Tour and Workshop, and although I know that many of you have been waiting for a nice long travelogue-style group of episodes on the tour, I'm actually going to try to go through this somewhat briefly. Much of what we did was the same as the 2009 tour, with the exception that we spent an extra day in Tsurui, the first town that we stop in Hokkaido, to photograph the Red Crown Cranes. That's why we're in that particular town. If you want a real blow-to-blow recollection of what we did on each day, including some tips and techniques on what we bore in mind while shooting, then you might want to look up the 5 episodes from 2009, which are 178 and 79, then 182 through 84. These basically cover everything that we did, including the advice and stuff that I gave to the participants. I also covered my first reconnaissance trip to the snow monkeys last year as well, and that was in episode 187. And again, a few weeks ago from this year's workshop in episode 233. So check those out too if you're looking for sort of more information on what we do or are just interested in following along with our adventures. Note too that I uploaded 60 images to Flickr and to my online gallery from this year's Hokkaido workshop, and I'll put a link to in this show notes that will basically list all of these images on my online gallery. And I've selected just 11 images to talk about today, which was an even tougher job than narrowing down my original selection to just 60 images. These images can be seen in iTunes or on your iPhone if you subscribe to the Enhanced Podcast. And they're all available on my blog at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com, along with the transcript and the audio for today's podcast. So we have 6 days and 11 images to get through in the next 30 minutes or so. So let's get started. We'd have a day and a half in Tokyo, having gotten back from Nagano and the snow monkeys early on the Saturday evening. and it was nice to have a break, and many of the participants that were joining both tours did some sightseeing or caught up with their photo selection, etc., on the Saturday evening and the Sunday. But all in all, it turns out, you know, this didn't go down quite so well. You know, I was really sort of giving people a bit of time to get over the first trip before the second. But some people were a little bit stressed about having to get over to Haneda Airport on the Monday morning. So I sort of at the last minute arranged two minibuses to pick us all up, pick everyone up from the hotels and take them to the to Haneda Airport. And, you know, basically that sort of saved the day. But in the 2011 tours that I've just announced, I've cut this out. We'll basically now go straight through from the Snow Monkeys. We'll go straight through to Haneda Airport, spend the night at the airport, and then head off to Hokkaido the following morning. And this will make things easier for everyone, including me. You know, although I won't get to spend the weekend at home, I won't have to get up as early as I would if I was heading out to the airport from home, which will make a nice change. So basically, you know, we're picking up here after the Snow Monkeys. The participants have had a day and a half in Tokyo, and I've just got off the plane at Kushiro Airport. And we have basically a 40-minute drive to the Akan Crane Center, Akan International Crane Center. And we spend just until about 2 p.m. photographing the beautiful, majestic Red Crown cranes. I've shared better pictures of these cranes with you in the past, so I'll skip that today. But I did want to share image 2452 with you, which I shot at the end of the first day over at the Kikuchi Farm, which is where we go after the cranes have been fed at the crane center. Here I'd captured three cranes flying close to the setting sun with trees as a backdrop. Unlike one of my previous shots similar to this, where I'd enhanced the colour and even added a little colour in the uneventful sky, this is from a couple of years ago now, these colours are how the camera captured them, with the slight saturation boost from my landscape picture style emulation. I like the way the two outside cranes here have their wings up, and the centre crane, probably the youngster, has his wings down. Also, this looks great in a print because the cranes are not totally silhouetted. There's just a little bit of detail still in the birds, which adds depth when viewed large. On the second morning, we went to the river where I'd shot from the Ottawa Bridge. I'd shot one of my favourite images of all time, probably, called Distant Dance. And that was from our Hokkaido workshop in 2008. But the conditions weren't good this day. We got our gear out and shot a few frames, but it wasn't too, it wasn't cold enough. It was too warm for the mist to form, and there was no chance of frost on the trees on this first day. And it has, you know, basically it has to be minus 15 degrees Celsius or 5 degrees Fahrenheit with no wind for the mist to make a showing, and it just wasn't happening. I don't recall exactly, but I think it was about 12 degrees Celsius or 10 degrees Fahrenheit on the first morning. Also, although it was about 4 a.m. When we left the hotel for the bridge on this the second morning, a bus full of photographers that had passed us on the road in front of the hotel as we came out had all put their tripods in place on the bridge by the time we got there. So I had our bus driver do a little bit of espionage and talk with the bus driver of the other group and find out what time they were scheduled to leave the following morning. And we left the hotel 10 minutes before that to get the better positions the next day. I actually met their guide later and agreed that we would share the best spots the next time if we were there on the same day. But we all had a laugh about it. Yeah, there were no hard feelings or anything. Later on that second day, we went back to the Akan International Crane Center and shot the cranes again. The conditions were great, but I didn't really get anything brilliant of the cranes. I'm after a really spectacular shot of just two cranes doing a mating dance and honking with their steamy breath visible, but it didn't happen again this year. For first-time visitors, though, most of the participants got some very nice shots. The highlight of the day when photographing the cranes at Akan, though, is actually when they feed the cranes, and you get white-tailed eagles like the one that we see in image number 2464 that come in to steal the fish. This is one of my favourite eagle shots from this year because there's just so much detail in there and the focus is perfect. The great thing about this location as well is that the field full of snow below the birds acts as a huge reflector, reflecting the sun back up onto the underside of the birds. So you don't have to deal with much contrast and you get beautifully lit subjects. I shot this with the 1DS Mark IV and the 600mm f4 lens at 2,500th of a second at ISO 200, by the way. The following morning did see a little bit of mist on the river as it was about minus 18 Celsius or 0 Fahrenheit as the sun rose, but I didn't really like many of my shots. The trees were not frosty, so although, again, this was a good opportunity for the first-time visitors, David Lee, for example, said that he could go home happy, a happy man right at that point. But I didn't really improve any of the images that I've already got. One that I did like, although it doesn't contain a whole lot of mist, is image number 2465. This was an 8-second exposure with the 300mm f2.8 lens with the 1.4x extender fitted. Yeah, I was at ISO 400 as well, so you can tell that this is still before there was a lot of available light. But the warm morning sun reflecting on the river really popped out on this when I did a white balance based on the snow in Lightroom. Again, when viewed large, the silky surface of the water is nice here. One thing to note here too is that the bridge, which is crowded with photographers each morning, actually shudders with the movement of the photographers, so long exposures it is actually not a great idea. You have to do a number of them just hope that you can get a time when people aren't moving around to get one that is sharp as this. Later in the day, we had time to head over to Lake Mashu, which is famous for being cloaked in fog and people not actually being able to see the lake. I heard a rumour that the lake was clear though, and there were some really nice clouds in the sky, so we made an unplanned excursion. I went wide to capture the great sky along with the mountains surrounding the lake that we can see in image number 2467. This is a Nix Software Silver Effects Pro black and white conversion with a slight blue tone, which I really like at the moment. Toning like this helps to bring out a little bit more detail in my opinion, and it's great fun to play with. On the afternoon of the 3rd of February, we headed to the Kusharo Lake where we were to photograph the hooper swans, and again, local information from my friend and photographer Yoshiaki Kobayashi, who I bumped into at the Ottawa Bridge that morning. He told me that the usually the spot where people go to visit at Kusharo Lake was not frozen. The place where people usually go was not frozen, but a small corner of the lake called Kotan was. So I again adjusted our plans and headed over to Kotan instead. And there were far more swans here, and as we can see in image 2470, there was a little bit of frozen, the corner of the lake here was frozen, and that's part of why the swans gather here. I went wide again using my 16-35mm lens wide open at 16mm to capture lots of the birds as well as that large tree to the left and that big sky. I had my tripod in the lake with all of the legs contracted and basically framed the shot and then just sat back on a rock with my cable release and waited for the swan to spread their wings, as we can see that one did in the middle of the group, just to the left of the reflection of the sun here. I hung on for another shot that I really wanted, where the swan was right in front of the sun, which I also uploaded. I managed to capture that. But all round, I prefer this shot for its composition and multiple points of interest. I also shot some video here, which I will get around to editing soon and be sharing with you. The following morning was incredibly cold. It was minus 30 degrees Celsius, which is negative 22 degrees Fahrenheit. As I was getting ready to leave my room, the bus driver called to tell me that the bus wouldn't start because it was so cold. We had the hotel people try their bus in the hope that they could, you know, that we could borrow that, but that wouldn't start either, and it was obviously colder than even, you know, these local people were used to. The driver kept trying though, and after about 20 minutes or so and an almost flat battery, he finally got our bus started, and we used a further 10 minutes or so to get the bus warmed up, and then we set off maybe 40 minutes or so late for the Bihoro Pass. This is a mountain pass that has like a 10-minute climb from the car park to a vantage point overlooking the Kusharo Lake, where we'd photographed the swans on the previous day. And boy, was it cold at the top. But I, with my happy little hunter's or fisherman's response that keeps my hands warm in cold conditions, was having a ball. It was so cold that even my 1DS Mark III's battery ran flat from fully charged in about an hour, and that's pretty much unheard of with these modern batteries. I was sort of singing and messing around though, and at one point I turned to the participants that were left, with, you know, most of the older crew had gone back to the bus, and I sort of turned and said, "It's not that cold really." And I knew that I'd said something weird when they all just sort of looked back at me without saying a word. And a few uncomfortable moments later, we were all laughing our heads off. Around this time, we noticed that a sun pillar was forming over the island in the center of the lake, as we can see in image number 2479. This is basically a phenomenon that only happens when it's extremely cold, and it's caused by the water particles in the air freezing and reflecting the sun's light. It appears below the sun at an angle relative to the height of the sun in the sky. As the sun got higher, the pillar got closer to us. Another incredible thing about this image is that the top of the line of clouds are actually rainbow coloured. You can only just make it out in the web-sized version, but without, you know, any manipulation at all, that line of clouds is reflecting a whole spectrum of colours at us. Already very late to get back for breakfast, we drove back down towards the lake, along which we'd traversed to get back to the hotel, and we noticed the sun pillar again, now much closer, so we stopped the bus for another 10 minutes or so, and I captured image number 2482. You can see more here how the water crystals suspended in the air are glistening in the light of the sun. Again, I have a video of this which I will share at some point soon, but it really was an amazing sight, like a beautiful and relaxing swirling pillar of light. This is now another one of those things that happens so rarely that it's unlikely, but I really hope that it will happen again for the participants of future workshops. We actually arrived back at the hotel at 9 a.m, which is the time that the breakfast buffet was due to stop, but they allowed us another 20 minutes or so to grab breakfast before we broke camp to drive over to the Shiretoko Peninsula and the town of Daosu, where we were hoping for sea ice or ice flow, on which the Stellar Sea Eagles and the White-tailed Eagles would perch and pose for our cameras in the following morning. As you can see from image 2487 though, there was like one tiny piece of ice in the entire Nemuro Straits between Far Eastern Japan and the Kunashiri Island, and that's the first of the Kuril Islands that Japan is still trying to get Russia to give back. I like the way the four Stellar Sea Eagles seem to be admiring the sun as it rises over what's essentially still Far East Russia. We had chartered a boat, and the skipper was trying really hard to find a substantial amount of sea ice for us to drop some fish onto to attract more eagles, But after 3.5 hours, we had to give up. It was a beautiful sunrise, and we even saw a pod of Baird's beaked whales in the channel, as we can see in image number 2492. But the Eagle Shoot was, you know, that was such a highlight of the 2009 workshop, now seemed like a distant memory. The day before we were here, and the day after, I later found, was actually very good for the sea ice. Apparently there was plenty, so I was pretty disappointed. For the 2011 workshops, I've moved the whole schedule out by 2 weeks, and we're now going to have 2 consecutive days here in Lausu, on the 12-day tour, that is. We're also going to be here in the area in a better time on the 5-day tour too. So I'm much more confident that we'll get ice next year, especially on the 12-day tour, but hopefully on the 5-day tour too. At the end of the day, though, it's all in the hands of Mother Nature and what she decides to dish up for us. Nothing is guaranteed when you're dealing with nature. Later in the day, we drove around to Utoro, another harbour town on the other side of the Shiretoko Peninsula, where we headed into the Shiretoko National Park. We got some nice deer shots, and I also photographed a fox, but I didn't upload it to my gallery as it wasn't any better than the fox shots that I've already got uploaded. We went back into the park the following day, and one of the first things that I heard was a great spotted woodpecker that we can see in image 2493. I put my 1.4x extender on my 300mm f2.8 as I didn't have my 600mm f4 with me. So, yeah, this is about as close as I could get. Every time I took a few paces forward, this guy, he flew to a tree further back, deeper in the woods. I like the overall light, airy feel to this shot, though, and the contrast of the black and the white bird with that red splash of colour against the light brown and beige colours of the background is pretty nice. There was also a nuthatch that I photographed, but I couldn't get a really clean shot of it. There was always a twig overlapping its tail or something, so I didn't upload any of these to my gallery either. We walked deep into the park, and the group quickly became dispersed. I was toying with the idea of buying some digital walkie-talkies for this year's trip, but I reckon I'll pull the trigger on that for next year. This will make it easier for people to stay in touch when the group does break up. These would be good for the Antarctica expedition in November too, so I think I'm going to really take a look at this now. It would also enable people to find something interesting to alert the other groups about as well. You know, if you see something like the woodpecker that I'd found, and there was only one other person that was able to photograph it, you know, essentially if we had, say, you know, 4 walkie-talkies amongst the group, we could let each other know when things are going off in various areas. So I think I'm going to really seriously think about that for next year. Deer are nice, and I really like to find bucks, though, with their huge antlers. And I came across this really laid-back guy that we see in image 2494, just sitting in the snow and chewing on what was probably a strip of bark from a tree. Although he's quite young, he reminded me of an old cowboy chewing on some chewing tobacco. I shot this with the 300mm f2.8, and this is exactly how it was framed in camera. Note how I positioned the horns so that they were not intersecting with the brown of the exposed trees in the background. The one on the left side comes close, but the horns are actually surrounded by at least a thin line of white snow to maintain the separation that I was after. We actually said goodbye to 2 of the participants a few hours after shooting these last images, as 2 of them had only signed up for the first 6 days. There would be just 10 of the 12 participants that went on to the central Hokkaido area for the landscape leg. And I have to admit, this year the landscape leg was not as exciting as last year by far. The weather fell apart on us to a degree. And we fought through heavy snow to get from Utoro to the Shiritoko Peninsula, on the Shiritoko Peninsula over to the Memambetsu Airport, where the two that would leave us were to fly from. And actually, the plane that they left on was one of the only planes that was able to fly that day. We were incredibly lucky to be able to get them out of Hokkaido. The weather also slowed us down for much of the landscape leg, and so we seemed to spend a lot more time on the bus than last year, which led to a little bit of frustration among the, among some of the participants. And although we got very lucky with places like Mount Asahi, where it cleared for us to shoot just for a few minutes, the general feeling was that it was not really worth the amount of travel that it cost us. So these concerns and the fact that we have, we'd scheduled a separate short 5-day workshop in addition to the more relaxed 12-day workshop in 2011 is the reason that I've stopped splitting the longer workshop up into optional sections. Another piece of valuable feedback was that people wanted to spend more time in one night, more time in hotels, and other than in the first most of the tour, we spend only one night in the hotels. But some people really wanted to spend two nights and spend a little bit more time in each location. So I've really taken all of this this feedback to heart, and it's exactly what I've planned for 2011. I've named this episode Part 1, and I'll probably go on and share some of the images from the landscape leg with you in the coming weeks. But for now, let's leave Hokkaido there and start looking toward the 2011 trip. If you are listening to this and considering the 2011 trip, note that the images that we looked at today are just a small example of what we shoot, but the locations are the same. We will also spend one day at a place called Odaito, where there's a small but definite chance of photographing a sunrise where the sun itself is not round, it's square or even wine glass shaped as it reflects in the sea. So that's something to look forward to in addition to the locations that we looked at today. That's new. Also, if you're considering joining us, please book soon. I announced the workshops to my mailing list last night, and we already have 4 bookings and 1 tentative, so I don't think the places will be open very long this year. If we should be fully booked by the time you find out about this, but you would like to come, then by all means drop me a line using the contact form linked from the mbpworkshops.com website, or just mail me at workshop@martinbaileyphotography.com. And I'll put you on the cancellation list. Use the same address if you have any questions about the tours and workshops as well, after you've checked out the details on the mbpworkshops.com website. It would be great to see you in Hokkaido and Nagano for the snow monkeys as well, if you can make it to Japan next year. So, they really are photography tours and workshops of a lifetime. So if it's something that you're interested in, then please do check it out. As I said, I really wanted to just scoot through a few example images today to give you an idea of what we got up to on our Hokkaido photography tour and workshop 2010. If you want to follow through in more detail, like I said, that if you've not listened to last year's episodes, then do take a listen to those episodes that I mentioned earlier. Links to all of them are in the transcript for today's episode on my blog at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com. Thanks for listening today, and remember that you can find me on Flickr and Facebook, as well as Twitter, and of course my blog and the photography forum. All links are at the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so drop by and check that out. And I'll be back next week with another Martin Bailey Photography podcast. In the meantime though, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye bye.
This is Dave Warner, and I'm the host of the LensFlare35.com podcast. Each week I bring you interviews with some of the top photographers using digital SLR cameras. They share some of their coolest tips and tricks, techniques, and news about what they're up to. So please take a moment to visit the website or subscribe to LensFlare35 on iTunes.
Hi, this is Jeff Curto, and I hope you'll tune in to Camera Position, my podcast about the creative side of photography. As a 30-year professional photographer, I have long believed that the why of photography is a lot harder than the how. What do we do with it? How do we express ourselves? How do we continue to pursue our passion in photography? And that's what Camera Position is all about. Find me at cameraposition.com or on the Photocast Network. Thanks.
The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.